Nature's Eternal Religion, Book 2, The Salvation, Chapter 1, Nature and Religion. In studying the creatures of nature, we have observed with increasing clarity that each creature has its own peculiar means of survival, of propagation, of gathering food, of defense, of ushering in the next generation. Not only does each creature have its particular pattern for survival, but in this pattern are embedded many peculiarities that are to each creature inherently its own. For example, a beaver instinctively knows how to build dams, and this provides a useful means for its survival. A cat instinctively knows how to catch mice, and this also is a great aid in its survival. A cat can do many other things that are inherently peculiar to a cat, but certainly building dams is not one of them. Furthermore, we could never hope to teach a cat to swim like a beaver, to build dams like a beaver, cut trees like a beaver, and to act like a beaver. The instinctive, inbred peculiarities of a beaver are its own, and those of a cat are its own. Similarly, in observing the peculiarities of the human race, we find an inherent characteristic that is universal and peculiar to the human races, and that is the pursuit of some religion or other. When we study the history of the different civilizations, of the different peoples that have lived on the face of the earth, of the different races, we find almost without exception that each and every one of them had some kind of a religion. Whether it was one of the highly developed civilizations of the Egyptians, or the Greeks, or the Romans, or whether it was some backward colored tribe, like the Indians in the Amazon region of South America, or on the Great Plains of North America, or whether the Hottentots in Africa, no matter how primitive they are, or how primitive they were, they all have had a religion, and they all have some kind of a religion today. The fact is that the human races, from the most primitive to the most highly developed nations of the world today, have been infested with thousands of religions, all different from each other. Even within the different religions, they have divided and subdivided themselves into a multiplicity of sub-religions, such as the Christian religion, for instance, until just about every walking Christian has a belief that differs from his co-religionists, each one wandering around in the belief that he has the ultimate key to knowledge and wisdom, and that everybody, but everybody, that differs from him is wrong in so far as he differs from his own religion. Little does such beguiled Christian realize what deceptive and flimsy tenets are the basis of his creed, nor does he realize its true origin. In no religion has the splintering, fragmentation, internal bickering, squabbling, and disagreement been more manifest than in the Christian religion itself. We can be sure the Jew planned it that way. And nevertheless, from all the foregoing, we must conclude that religion and the affinity of mankind for religion is an inborn trait with which nature has endowed us and is inbred in our genes. We apparently need religion for our survival, one way or another. And the fact is, we do. As the Old Testament says, a people without vision perish. All people, in order to survive and flourish, need a religion, a creed, a life philosophy. They urgently need a religion to give them direction, goal, and purpose. We need a sense of belonging. Without it, mankind flounders, withers, and dies like a fish out of water. Furthermore, the more closely a people's religion is rooted to their racial soul, the more healthy and dynamic it is for that particular race. Fortunate is that race whose religion has found its own racial soul. Many religions have been notoriously bad for the races that have embraced them. As, for example, the white race, having embraced Christianity, or should we say, having it foisted upon them by the Jews. Some religions were neither good nor bad, but were utterly ridiculous and nonsensical. Such an example is the religion with the multiple gods that the Romans and the Greeks had, gods that cavorted around in the heavens, committing all kinds of infidelities, adulteries, and trivial nonsense. There are a few, a very few, that have been good for the race which embraced the religion they created. One notorious example is the Judaic religion of the Jews, which was tailor-made for a parasitic race. It has been the greatest thing that they have produced, and it has sustained them for the last several thousand years. In sum total, we can safely conclude that most religions have been notoriously bad, and it has been the unfortunate lot of the white race to be cursed with one of the worst of them in the last 2,000 years. I feel extremely blessed and fortunate to be a member of the great creative white race. I am very proud to be a member of the white race, and I love the white race more than anything in the world. Nature has endowed the white race with a deep instinctive loyalty to its own kind. Racial loyalty. We have been endowed with this instinctive characteristic for our own survival by a gratuitous nature. This healthy instinct has been atrociously smothered by an outrageous alien religion that we are cursed with and seem to be unable to shake off. Yes, we are cursed with the Jewish religion of Christianity, whether we like it or not. It is a sick religion, a death-oriented religion, a religion that is destroying us. It is smothering every healthy instinct with which nature has endowed us, and is blunting and perverting all the best attributes with which nature has so generously blessed the white race. What we most desperately need is a new religion, a religion of our own, a religion that was created by the creative genius of the white race itself, and not foisted upon us by the treacherous Jew. We desperately need a good religion. But what is a good religion? This is really not too hard to answer. A good religion is one that helps to promote and advance the race which embraces it. If it helps that particular race, it is a good religion. If it neither helps nor hurts, it is a useless religion and is more of a nuisance than anything else. If it hinders the race that embraces it in its fight for survival, then it is a bad religion and harmful to its adherents. We have heard countless numbers of times people say, well, you have to believe in something. This is true to the extent that everyone does need a life philosophy that relates to and reconciles us with the natural world in which we find ourselves. One that helps us to have a realistic and rational view of our struggle for survival in a competitive and hostile world. The closer this philosophy or religion or creed, whatever we may choose to call it, harmonizes with the laws of nature, the more beneficial, realistic, and useful such a creed will be. The more it departs from the natural laws and indulges in a flight from reality to a dream world of fantasy and superstition, the more artificial, unrealistic, and dangerously harmful such a creed will become. Since I am addressing myself solely and exclusively to the membership of the white race, I can say without hesitation that the only thing we are really interested in is a creed that will help to propagate, protect, promote, preserve, and advance and expand the white race. We are interested in a religion that will aid and benefit the white race in its struggle for survival in a competitive and hostile world. We are not interested in a creed for the Papuans of New Guinea. We are not interested in a creed for the American Indians. We are not interested in a creed for the niggers, neither here in America, nor the niggers of Africa. We are not interested in a religion for the Hindus, nor for the Chinese. Nor are we interested in a universal religion for the salvation of all mankind. Not at all. We are interested, purely and simply, in a religion for the survival of the white race and the white race alone, and helping that race advance to heights greater than have ever been dreamed of before. When we put it on this plain and simple basis, namely, the two concepts enunciated, one, that a religion is good if it helps to benefit the race that embraces it, and two, that we are only and exclusively interested in a religion for the white race, then the conclusion becomes fairly simple. In fact, the formulation of a creed for the white race can now be basically summed up in one sentence. The guiding principle of our new religion should be, will it benefit the white race? Whereas the formulation of a new creed is relatively simple and relatively basic, we are faced with a much more gigantic problem of clearing the ground of all the rubble, rubbish, and debris of the present religion that we are now stuck with. As is so often the case, in building a beautiful new edifice where all the ground has already been preempted by trash and slums, clearing the required area often presents more of a problem than building the new structure itself. So it is with our own plight. Building the new religion is not nearly as difficult as clearing away the rubbish and confusion impregnated in the brains of our white kinsmen. Our greatest task is exposing the monstrosities of the Christian teachings and bringing our white brothers and our white sisters back to their senses to clearly see what is good for us, good for our children, good for our future generations, and good for our race. We are faced with the task of clearing up the aberrations that have unhinged the minds of the white race for the last two millenniums and have nearly brought about the wreckage of our race. Our foremost task is to straighten out the white man's thinking. The first and most urgent question which the white man must come to grips with is the matter of finding himself and following the brilliant destiny nature has mapped out for him. All other problems, such as food supply, pollution, traffic congestion, overpopulation, finances, etc., will become child's play as soon as the white man regains full control of his own faculties and of his own destiny. If he does not solve this prime and urgent problem, all others will never be solved, nor will they really matter. If the white man remains entrapped within the Jewish framework of ideas, he will fumble and flounder in confusion until he is obliterated from the face of the earth, and all the other problems will become utterly meaningless. Nor is our major problem overcoming the Jews, the niggers, and the other colored scum of the world. No, not at all. Our major problem, first and foremost, is to straighten out the white man's thinking. We must reorient his thinking to basic values. Once we have cleared his brain of the Jewish poison, clearing away the Jews and the niggers from our midst too will be child's play. It is to this noble objective that our new religion is dedicated. The white man must be brought back to his senses. Before we can even begin to straighten out the white man's thinking, there are a few basic prerequisites that we must be crystal clear about. The first one is, just where does the white man's loyalty lie? And second, what is the purpose of his life here on earth? In answering the first question, we must realize that we, the white race, are now in a desperate battle for survival. It is being waged by a treacherous and cunning enemy who has so befuddled the minds of the white race that the overwhelming majority of white people don't even know who the enemy is, and in fact, most of them don't even know that they are in a bitter war in which they are the victim marked for extinction. The white man's mortal enemy, the international Jewish apparatus, has so confused and scrambled the brains of the white man that he is now not even putting up the least bit of a fight or the slightest resistance. In fact, the white man's brains are so polluted with the wrong concepts and the wrong ideas, that he has actually joined with the Jew in his own destruction. In any battle, it is of paramount importance to know who your enemy is, what are his weapons, what is his strength, what is his method of operation, and many other vital facts that can be gleaned from intelligence. Know your enemy. The more you know about your enemy, and the more you know about your own strength and weaknesses, the better prepared you are. Not only must you know the strength, the weaknesses of your enemy, and that of your own, you must also know who is on your side, and know what it is you are fighting for. Furthermore, you must have a specific, detailed, aggressive plan of battle that will inspire confidence for victory. You must have a specific program. You must have a goal. One of the most powerful weapons the Jew has in his favor is his masterful manipulation of confusion into the minds of the white race. He spreads confusion as a farmer spreads fertilizer on his fields. And the Jews' harvest in war and destruction of our people is even a thousandfold more productive than the farmer's fertilizer. The one area that most white people are desperately confused about is just where does their loyalty lie. The other major question is, what is our purpose in life? In the next two chapters, I want to discuss these two vital questions. Questions that have confused the white race to no end. It is my purpose to explicitly set forth the position of the Church of the Creator on these basic issues of life.